My name is Daisha Clay. I'm the audio librarian here at Classical 91.7. While I'm a real librarian, I have a deep, dark
secret.
I know very little about classical music. I grew up listening to rock. And I know something about jazz. But when it comes to classical, the thing is, I want to learn. And as it turns out, I work with people who know a lot about classical music. Every week on this show, one of my coworkers will give me a homework assignment, a piece of classical music they think I should know, and then we'll discuss it. Come learn with me in the classical classroom. Hi, I am Daisha Clay, and this is the Classical Classroom. Today, my instructor will be Angela Schmidt, who by day is an announcer at Classical 91.7, and by night, Batman. No, she is an opera singer.
Don't I wish I was Batman.
So what are you going to be teaching me about today, Angela?
Well, Daisha, I'd like to talk to you about bel canto and what that means. So bel canto is an Italian phrase that means well sung, but it is an entire style of opera. Okay, so it had its heyday in the early to mid 19th century, and it was an exclusively Italian phenomenon. And there are three composers that were important to bel canto singing. The first was Rossini, and then Donizetti, and then Bellini. Those are the three big Italian bel canto composers mm-hmm. that you gotta kind of remember. Have you heard of any of those before?
I have.
Yeah. Anything come to mind? Like any compositions that you can think of?
Nothing. Literally nothing springs to mind.
Well, Rossini had some really popular tunes. He was one of the, you know, the one that goes,
yes.
That's Rossini. You know Rossini.
I've learned everything I know about classical music and opera, apparently, from Warner Brothers cartoons.
Yeah, Elmer Fudd was really helpful in bringing us a lot of opera, wasn't he?
Totally.
Yeah. Okay. So bel canto was really important to the history of opera, and I'm not going to get into the entire history of opera right now. That would take hours. But bel canto came about because opera had reached a point where opera singers, were like the rock stars of their day, and composers started realizing that, and they started writing music to showcase singers, to give singers an avenue to just get up there and show off what they could do vocally. Yeah. And so a characteristic of a bel canto opera is that it has super flashy vocal gymnastics. Singers are singing a lot of notes really fast. They're singing really high, they're singing really low, and filling everything in between. Okay. Yeah. And what that meant was that everything else sort of took a supporting role to the voice. So it was simplified. The orchestra music was pretty simple. The drama was simple. The staging, lighting, costumes. Well, not necessarily costumes, but everything else that went into making an opera great was there to support the singer.
So basically we're talking like the pop music equivalent of opera.
Which, yeah.
Is that, you know, sort of like,
yeah.
I don't know.
Beyonce?
Sure. Beyonce yeah. is great, has yeah. a beautiful voice, mm-hmm. and is generally awesome.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not exactly complex music.
Yeah, that's a really good comparison, actually, okay. because you can think of any pop star out there these days, like Beyonce, who is a superstar, and people go to see Beyonce. They don't go to listen to what the band is doing necessarily.
Right, right.
It's like
the band
a show.
The band is yeah. sort of, you know, they're her backup peeps, you know.
But it's the Beyonce show, right?
Right.
Yeah. So,
okay.
So there were these singers in the early to mid 19th century who were like the Beyoncés of their day. And people would go to the opera to see these singers and just see them show off. And they didn't really care what was going on dramatically at the time.
Okay.
And so that's where all of these operas kind of came from. The opera that we're going to use to give you an example of bel canto is called La Sonnambula by Vincenzo Bellini.
The Sleepwalker.
Yeah. Hey, yeah. Somebody did their homework. So yeah. This premiered in 1831 in Milan in Italy. The plot is fairly simple. There's a girl named Amina, and a guy named Elvino, and they're engaged, and they love each other very much. And Amina, unbeknownst to most people, has a little problem with sleepwalking, and it's gotten her into some trouble because she slept walked her way into the apartment of another man.
Ooh, girl.
And her fiancé, Elvino, finds out and gets super mad and breaks up with her, and she's distraught, and he's about to marry another woman. And then toward the end of the opera, they see her sleepwalking on a roof of a house.
Oh.
And danger, danger. And the whole town is like coming out of their houses and they're like, oh my God, Amina's going to fall off this roof. Everyone, shh, don't wake her up. And it soon becomes apparent to everyone that she didn't actually cheat on her fiancé. She just sleptwalked her way into somebody's apartment. Before we actually listen to this excerpt of the opera, let's talk about what we're going to kind of be listening for. So one thing that bel canto singers like to do all the time was add ornaments to what was written in the score. Here's an example of a simple phrase with an ornament added to it. Okay, kind of simple. How about this? I just kind of added a little
flourish.
A flourish, yeah. So that's an example of ornamenting a phrase.
Okay.
And this was not only asked of singers, it was expected of singers to ornament phrases in bel canto. Bellini wrote out a melody, and then there's some other singing, and then he writes the melody again, and it's exactly the same, measure for measure. But the singer was not going to sing that exactly the same. The singer was expected to add a bunch of ornaments that second time through, so it's not boring. Because why would we want to hear something twice with no changes in it? Boring, right?
Huh.
So we'll listen for that.
I have a quick question.
Yes.
So was this sort of improv in my lesson about Baroque music, early music, that the pieces were very simple and it was expected that the performers would improvise in a live performance?
Yes.
So this is similar.
Like, yes.
Okay.
Great. I'm so glad you brought that up because this bel canto it was definitely influenced by that Baroque style of improvising in performances.
Look at me drawing lines between stuff, making connections.
You just connected the entire history of opera.
Yes.
Well done. Well done. Okay. What we're going to listen to is this aria that Amina sings at the end. Before Amina actually sings her last aria, there is a recitativo section. It's the Italian word for recitation. It's a sort of half-sung, half-spoken section in which actually all of the drama unfolds and the action happens and the plot happens. It's what moves the plot forward are these recitativo sections. And then it's followed by an aria, which is the Italian word for, do you know?
Air?
Yes, it's the Italian word for air. It's a melody.
Okay.
And the aria at this point, there's not action happening in aria. It's the time in which the singer gets to just sing and show off. And it's what we sometimes refer to as a stand and sing aria. Like they're just making pretty sounds at this point.
Okay.
There's nothing happening dramatically. And so we start with the recitativo. It's like you're kind of loading the gun. In order to like let it all shoot out in the aria, you're like getting everything laid out so everyone knows what's happening, and it builds up, it sets the stage for the character to then start singing this great aria.
So it's like sort of a build up to the climax where there can be this big explosion of sound.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. And then the aria happens, and it's not just a simple aria, it's actually in two parts. The first part is called a cavatina, which is a simple melody, and so we'll hear that. Then the chorus sings something in response to that, and then she comes back and sings the second part of the aria, which they call it a cabaletta, but that's like the faster part with all of the like really flashy stuff.
Okay.
So we've got cavatina, chorus section, cabaletta, which is the fast section. And the cabaletta is in this form of what we call da capo. Have you ever heard that term before?
Yes.
Okay. It's Italian for from the head. And what it basically means is there's a melody that gets played and then something else is played or sung. And then that first melody, let's call it the A section, comes back. Only it's a little different because the singer has added some ornaments.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we call that da capo form.
Da capo. Yeah.
So let's have a listen to the aria from La Sonnambula. We're going to be listening to Edita Gruborova. So Amina is currently still sleepwalking.
And in this part, isn't she, she's dreaming of meeting Alvino?
Yeah. She just said, here she's saying, she's actually just picked up a flower at this point. O fior, flower. So it's super dramatic and kind of ominous because she's singing to a dead flower. And she's on the roof right now also. Okay, so that was the end of the recitativo section.
Okay.
Here's the aria. And the orchestra is pretty simple, right?
Right.
Okay, now here's the singer. She's singing this whole time to the flower. She's comparing the dead flower to the love between her and Alvino. Their love has died.
Oh, Lord.
And so she's distraught, therefore she's singing a beautiful aria.
As you do when you're distraught.
As you do. And the orchestra this whole time is playing something very simple. There's Alvino. He's saying, I can bear this no more.
Is he watching her at this point?
Yeah, Amina's up on the roof. Everybody's down on the ground watching.
Okay.
And terrified that she's going to take a wrong step. Alvino again. I can bear no more this grief. She's saying, our love only lasted a day, just like this flower. Notice how everything's really smooth and connected. That's called legato. Have you heard that term before?
Yeah.
It's like very just flowing along.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she's filling in all the spaces in between the notes.
Yeah.
Called the trill, the two notes that she shakes in between.
Oh, you're right. She never actually goes silent. She's just sort of, she gets quieter and then louder.
Yeah, I mean, she breathes, obviously, but really, really long phrases. Okay, and she also likes to, I mean, this was a thing that these composers did in bel cantos. They would just repeat words over and over again because the point was to make a beautiful sound.
Mm-hmm.
So she's only said, like, I don't know, 20 words, but she just keeps repeating them. She has a nice little duet with the cello here. This is called, we're coming up to a cadenza. Do you know what a cadenza is?
No.
It's a point at which everything just kind of stops and the soloist does something that sounds like improvising. Here it is.
Ooh.
So that's the end of the cavatina, and now it goes on. There's some little more recitativo.
This time from Elvino.
Yep. Well, he's actually going to have a little bit of a conversation with Amina while she's sleepwalking.
Ah, okay.
And this is, again, where all the action is happening. Where Elvino's saying, oh, I get it. You were sleepwalking.
Who's that deep voice?
That is another character who
Rodolfo,
is,
oh, yeah?
That deep voice is Rodolfo. That was the guy who Amina found herself in his apartment. Mm. And he's been trying to say, no, listen to her. She's innocent.
Because he's a decent guy.
Yeah. He wasn't trying to take advantage of her.
Yeah.
You can do that, right?
Totally.
Oh, it's the chorus.
I'm assuming this is where she wakes up.
Yep, she's woken up. She says, oh, heavens, where am I? What do I see? Oh, have mercy, don't wake me. She still thinks she's dreaming because Elvino is right there in front of her and pledging his love.
And he's so dreamy.
He's very dreamy. Oh, gioia. Oh, joy. I've found you again, Elvino. And the chorus, naturally, is there watching all of this and commenting on the action.
Mm-hmm. Like Greek drama.
Mm-hmm. Bring everybody out on stage. The opera's about to end. Let's get our party on. And here we have the cabaletta, the flashy section.
Uh-huh. Here it comes.
As if it wasn't flashy enough yet.
The Mariah Carey section of the opera.
And this tune you're hearing right now, it's mm-hmm. going to come back a bunch of times.
Okay.
Basically singing about how she's just so happy and she can't hardly believe that everything's working out.
Woohoo!
Woohoo! And as you can hear, the orchestra, very simple right now, just going boom chop, boom chop, boom chop. So that's the end of the A section. Now we've got a little bit of different music with the chorus. And we are about to start that section again, that first section. Here it is again. Now listen to what she changes. She's changing a lot, isn't she?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And this would have been totally expected in Bellini's day.
Glass is breaking in the studio.
She's just doing another cadenza. Whatevs.
Oh,
the big rush to the finish.
Yeah, that was amazing. So, you guys can't see, but I'm actually holding a lighter in the air right now.
Which was what these operas were, the rock concerts of their time. They were, people would go to them and they would, it's not like going to the opera today where everyone's pretty quiet and, you know, sitting there and they applaud at the right moments. But back then in the 1800s, that's what people did for fun. And they would go there and they would yell and scream, like, while the people were singing. Like, if she had been in the middle of a high note, in the middle of this aria, you'd hear people in the audience going, woo, yeah!
Like a jazz performance.
And that was totally okay. And they would sometimes, if a singer sang something really, really well, they would make them sing it again. Yeah. Like, just do it again. We like that. Do it again.
More.
Yeah. So that is a pretty typical bel canto aria from Vincenzo Bellini, La Sonnambula.
That was fascinating.
Yeah.
It's really interesting to me when you explain it. There's so much math behind.
Mm.
You know, such mm-hmm. a beautiful.
It's a balancing
sound.
Act. Yeah, it's like he knew what he was doing when he was putting high notes here or there, and he planned out his phrases so that it all kind of culminated in this glorious thing at the very end, as it should. It's the end of the opera.
Right.
They've been sitting there for like 3 hours.
Wow.
And so they got to end on a high note.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Did you know that all of that went into it? And is that something that a regular non-classical musician would get a lot of enjoyment out of?
So I can only speak from my personal perspective, but I mean, I think that was lovely. The soloist's voice was mm-hmm. amazing.
Editha Gruborova, yeah, she's fantastic.
How she just seemed to effortlessly float over mm-hmm. the music. Mm-hmm. I mean, and I find that absolutely fascinating. Mm-hmm. Maybe a little. I actually find it a little easier to connect to
mm-hmm.
Than a strictly instrumental piece, because mm-hmm. there's a humanness mm-hmm. to it.
There are words.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
There are words. There's a story.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Well, this has been an absolutely fascinating lesson. I think that the only way that we could possibly improve upon it is by having had Bellinis while talking about Bellini.
Oh, my goodness. Good idea.
Why did we not do this?
Why did we not do that?
I guess because we're at work.
I suppose.
Yeah.
Boo.
Oh, well, Angela, thank you so much for the lesson.
You're very welcome.
Awesome.
It was so much fun. I love talking about opera to anybody who will listen. So,
yay.
Yay.
We'll have to talk about it some more.
Okay.
Everybody, thanks for tuning in to the Classical Classroom. We'll meet you next time.